This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right, let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, it is hour number two rolling along this morning, and get yourself ready for preseason football this weekend. All right, we got games tonight. There are six on tap, and then a bunch of games on Saturday and a couple of games on Sunday to wrap up the first preseason. And then here's how it works. So at the end of these games, everybody will go back to work next week, and everybody will try to evaluate what they saw, and everybody will make a big deal out of everything. Some will make a no deal out of something. Some teams will make a minor deal out of some things. But in the end, they'll just have talking points that may not matter in the big picture whatsoever. But it doesn't really matter, because at least it is something. It's product. It's a league that knows how to get in front of its customers and continues to want to be in the news all the time, not just during the season, but at any time. And preseason football is sort of that middle road, right? These are actual games. These are actually playing the sport. This isn't news. This isn't a signing. This isn't a workout. When you say somebody looked good in a preseason game, it's a lot different than when you say somebody looked good in practice on Tuesday. Right? There's two totally different things. Because at least in a game, there is some level of opponent competition that you're dealing with that is real game settings, rather than practice where you might not be in pads, for example. You might be in pads. You might be doing a light workout, but the job is to pretty much keep everybody healthy. But in a preseason game, you really are going up against people who want to make the team. I always thought that this was always a little dangerous because, you know, the same thing we talked about when it comes to joint practices in the NFL. Look, I know coaches love them. Players actually like them. I don't, because I'm always worried that somebody's going to get hurt. Like, some guy I need on my team is going to get hurt because they're going up against some rookie on the defensive line that wants to make a name for himself, and he, you know, goes for the knees or something horrible like that, and they always end up in scuffles. But nevertheless, preseason football at least is an evaluation on what the game speed should be, or getting close to it, when everybody that's worth their salt in this league actually does play in week one. C.J. Stroud experienced that last night. He was very tough on his reads. He missed a throw that led to an interception. They didn't put him out there very much, but they did throw the football. But I don't think you need to read a lot into that. Rookie quarterbacks are supposed to struggle, and the more they struggle in August, the less they'll struggle in September, even though they probably will struggle in September. So that's what you're basically getting out of the three games for these teams that are coming up. In the NASCAR series is racing at Indianapolis, and they run a road course there. And the only reason I bring this up was because there were a few events in August that were pretty big on the sports calendar. The month of August is usually just preseason football and college football conversation. But there were two events in the month of August that were pretty big if you were a fan of that particular sport. Actually, three. I'm going to go three. One was the PGA Championship, and that was the golf's final major, and so everybody was kind of gearing up for this one event, usually really hot, played in an area where it was sweltering, but they moved that to May, so now the major season ends in July with the British Open. There's the U.S. Open Tennis Tournament that takes place in Flushing Meadow, New York, that runs usually around Labor Day. It's usually ends around when football season starts, because there was always that weird time for CBS where they would have an NFL game and then they would give you tennis coverage, or they wouldn't have an NFL game because they were giving you tennis coverage. So it was always around that time. And then the third thing was the Brickyard 400. And if you were a racing fan, this was a major event on the calendar. And for those who are not familiar with it, back in 1994, NASCAR was blowing up in popularity. A lot of it had to do with Jeff Gordon. A lot of it had to do with, you know, just the sport in general was starting to take off, and they were expanding and they were going to other areas of the country that didn't traditionally fit the sort of southern NASCAR stock car racing, haul the moonshine through the mountains sort of history of the sport, right? They had raced in California before. They had run in road courses in Watkins Glen in New England, in upstate New York, I should say, and Sonoma out in Northern California. And they had gone to a couple of other places, but it was mostly a southern sport, and it was starting to really rapidly expand. New Hampshire had a track. That's basically where I got my start. That was my first beat when I got in this business in the early 90s. They were building tracks out in Las Vegas in the 90s. But one of the places that they wanted to go was they wanted to race at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And it was the 2.5 mile oval that really intrigued NASCAR. And they made this announcement in conjunction with the Speedway. And then on August 6th, 1994, they were going to run the Brickyard 400. And it was the first time stock cars were ever going to race at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, which was the home for open-wheel Indy cars for almost 100 years at that point. In fact, there was kind of a joke that there was actually going to be gasoline on Gasoline Alley, because Indy cars don't use that. They use a combination. But Indy cars, stock cars did. So it was a huge deal. It was a mega, mega deal to do it. And over 350,000 people attended the first race back in 1994. And it was, I can't begin to tell you what a gigantic event this was in the world of motorsports. It brought in people from IndyCar and NASCAR. Everyone was kind of curious of how this was going to work. You kind of race super speedways at Daytona where there's plenty of banking, but there's not a lot of banking in Indy. So, you're going to be braking into turn one when IndyCars didn't do that. It was all sorts of things that people were talking about. But at the end of the day, the winner of the Brickyard 400, the first ever Brickyard 400, was Jeff Gordon. And this was at the very, very beginning of Jeff Gordon's superstardom. He had won at Charlotte earlier the season for his first win on the Winston Cup Series victory. He had been kind of a Busch Series star, and now he was driving for Hendrick Motorsports. His car was colorful. It was rainbow. So it was stood out, the number 24. And he was from Indiana, so that also helped. He was born in Indiana, so he wins. It wasn't exactly in front of the home crowd, but nevertheless, he wins the biggest NASCAR race. They would continue to run that race year in and year out. Dale Earnhardt won there. There were a number of other times that Jeff Gordon won there. And it was considered one of the crown jewels of the sport. Now, the crown jewels of the sport were the Daytona 500, the Southern 500, the Coca-Cola 600, and then there was the Brickyard 400. It was quickly determined that this was like a major in golf. It was going to be one of the bigger events on the calendar. But there was a problem. And the problem was, I cannot put this more bluntly, they were boring. These races were boring. When you race on a super speedway, it's a restrictor plate race, meaning they don't want to get the cars up to their potential. They don't want to get them up to like 230 miles an hour. So they were restrictor plate race back in that time. So you keep the speeds all the same. So what you would happen is you'd fly around Daytona and you could draft and you could get right behind a car and you could use his resistance to the wind to benefit you. You'd use less gas. You would actually get a benefit. You'd get caught in that and then you could pull out at certain times. So there was a lot of strategic elements. Who would get paired up with who? Sometimes you'd have to give up a Daytona 500 potential win because your car didn't quite have it, but your teammates did. So you'd have to help your car, have to help your teammate pull off a victory. There's a whole bunch of elements, and they just didn't seem to exist at the Brickyard. And over the years, what happened was you would see time and time again, the race kind of got lost in the cluster of everything. Eventually, people just weren't interested in it. The attendance started to go down. The tires didn't hold up. The race got messy. It just wasn't fun. It wasn't exciting. It never, ever became what it was supposed to become. So, for example, people talk about the PGA, and they say, like, the PGA is the last major, right? It's the one on the list of four. Everyone wants to win the Masters. Everybody wants to win the British Open. People want to win the U.S. Open because it's our national championship. But, the PGA, it's a major, but it's not high on the list of majors. And that's what this started to become. This started to become one of those races where it was like, no, Daytona 500 is still going to be the premier race, but the Southern 500's got tradition, and it's Darlington. And the Coca-Cola 600 is the longest race, combining both driver endurance and manufacturing and engineering skill. This didn't have any of those elements. It had tire wear and no passing and huge gaps between one car and another. It was really kind of getting dull. And because NASCAR is willing to change a lot of things, we now have a playoff system in the sport when before it was just accumulation of points, and they've toyed with that playoff system a number of times. Sections now where you win stages in races, and that allows you to get some points out of the deal. They try really hard to be making sure that there's a competitive factor to it. They will adapt as much as they possibly can. And in 2021, they decided that, you know what? The oval, done. We're done with this. We've done it for a number of years. It's not working. No one's interested in this. It's boring. Let's do the road course. And that's what you're getting now. So you get this road course event this weekend. Personally, I kind of remember those. I remember those early days of the Brickyard 400. In my office, in my studio, I have a poster that was given to us in the media by Chevrolet at the time. And it has Jeff Gordon on it, and he hadn't won the race yet, but he features prominently. And it was kind of a cool poster, but it's kind of those things you get in the media. Sometimes they go, hey, guys, come in, get your free this. And so you'd go get your free stuff. And it was kind of a cool poster. But after I realized the importance of this event, I was like, I'm going to frame that thing. It's kind of cool. So I did. And every time I see it, I'm reminded of this unbelievable moment for the sport that's kind of gone now. And sometimes, again, you have to change and you have to adapt. We talk about sports needing to do that all the time. There's always this traditional feeling of sports that we need to protect. But then there's sometimes where you go, you know what? We tried this and it did not work. And it's time to realize it did not work. Instead of living with our own hubris, let's admit that maybe this wasn't as good as we thought it was. And let's at least change it. So people in Indiana can still go see a NASCAR stock car race in their home state. They're just not going to see them run on the ovals anymore. The road course has, you know, been iffy. It's a lot better than what was, well, previously there. But it's just one of those things that reminds me that sometimes you just really do have to adapt in sports. I think about this a lot in the NFL. I mean, the NFL does this all the time with the rule changes. They got to go, we're going to do this, and that doesn't work, and then we got to do this again. And you know what? Maybe we have to go to a 17-game schedule, an 18-game schedule, and you may not like it. We're going to do it. One day, Major League Baseball is going to expand, and one day they're going to realign everything. And they're going to have teams, because of the line with the AL and NL is gone, they're just going to say, you know what? Let's put the Atlanta Braves in with the Tampa Bay Rays, the Miami Marlins, and maybe that new team in Nashville, and we'll create a division there. Sometimes you just got to adapt or die.
Wake Up Call continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
Oh, here we go as we get the good, the bad, and the dumb. I've been forewarned by this, by the way. I've been told that we might be going long with some of these.
We could go in length on some of
these. I kind
of
like that. I always have fun. It's Friday. Why not? And it's still August, and there's still Little League Baseball on my television. So,
yeah, all right. There is.
Yeah.
Although I have to imagine they've got to be replays, right? They're not making kids get up this early.
No, but it's,
but, I mean, they do.
They're like, in case you missed Maine versus Connecticut.
Yeah. Live from Maine.
Don't you want to catch it? Yeah. All right, what's the good of the day?
The good of the day is Rory McIlroy completely eviscerating one Phil Mickelson.
Yeah, this is fun.
With a simple answer, right? I mean, I've listened to it. The question wasn't complex, and the answer was perfect. I mean, I couldn't think of it was almost like it was scripted. But here you go.
Totally different topic. The talk of the golf world is this book excerpt that came out about Phil Mickelson. I'm curious what the reaction in there was when you read about it.
I mean, at least he can bet on the Ryder Cup this year because he won't be a part of it. So,
I mean, brutal.
Why wasn't anybody laughing at that? That's funny. I would have laughed at that.
Is that golf decorum?
Yeah, is that it? Is that like golf clap worthy? I would have laughed my head off if I was standing there. Just as part of the media surrounding Rory, I would have been like, "That's Rory." Should have looked around and said, "But I'm bummed. What are we doing here?
Huh? Yeah.
Tip your bartender. What's going on?
Is this mic on?
Hello, people dead around here. What's going on? That was funny, kids. By the way, the Ryder Cup and Rory should be kind of like Rory could have zinged this even better than that, because the Ryder Cup that he was talking about. That the excerpt from the book was in 2012, and it was at Medina in Illinois. And it was won by Team Europe in a furious comeback on singles day on Sunday, in which they rallied from a, just like the United States had rallied at Brookline, the Europeans had rallied on the final day at Medina. But Rory could have said, well, if he did bet on that Ryder Cup, he would have lost $400,000, but I gained my wife. Because Rory met his wife at the Ryder Cup in 2012. Mm. You ever heard that story?
No.
I'll tell you the story. So Rory was young superstar. He had won the U.S. Open, and I think he won the PGA by that time. I think he was a two-time major winner at that time, by the time the Ryder Cup occurred. So Rory forgot that Illinois was Central Time. He's Irish. I don't blame him. You kind of have to, you need somebody to kind of tell you when you're in the United States, if you're not from the United States, what time zone you're in. Heck, people in America can forget what time zone they're in. So he had set his watch to Eastern Time, and he was due to tee off at a certain time. No, I'm sorry. He thought it was, he turned it back a bit. He turned it back. He forgot it was Central Time, but he had it another time. So he was late getting to his tee time. So a woman came to the door. She worked for the PGA. So she said, Mr. McIlroy, Rory, excuse me, you're due at the course in a half an hour. And he freaked out. He's like, oh my God, for what? They said, yeah, it's, and he goes, oh my God, my watch set wrong. And she arranged to get a police escort from the hotel to the golf course.
Oh.
So she got him a police escort, and he got to the golf course in time, barely warmed up, and was able to play his match at the Ryder Cup. And the rest is history. That young lady who helped Rory McIlroy, they formed a little attraction bond, and now that's his wife, and they have kids. So that's the Rory McIlroy Ryder Cup 2012 story. It's not as fun as Phil Mickelson possibly betting $400,000 on Team USA.
Now, did they win the Ryder Cup that year?
Yeah, the Europeans?
Yeah.
They did. They rallied on Sunday.
It's all right. So, I mean, he got...
So he got to win the Ryder Cup, and he met the love of his life.
Got the trophy and the ring.
That's right. That's right.
Now, Phil story, I mean, it's just crazy.
It is. $1 billion. I was processing this after the show. That's a ton of money, man.
But then I looked at some of the other statistics, too, is that he's lost nearly $100 million gambling.
Yeah.
But my favorite was averaging 9 bets per day in 2011.
That's crazy.
9 bets per day.
So yesterday we kind of got this news on the fly when it came through. So we were processing it on the fly. So after the show, I was reading more into it. Now, I started realizing, okay, when they say he bet $1 billion, it's not that he took $1 billion that he had.
Right.
Because I was like, does he
And it's not that he lost $1 billion either.
So let's just put it in context, like for the average Joe. It's like $1,000.
Right.
So you have $1,000. Let's say you bet $1,000 on 5 bets. So you make $200 a piece. And then on those 5 bets, you win 3 and lose 2. Then you take that money and then you bet your winnings. All of a sudden now you've gotten 600, you've lost the 400, then you bet the 600. You're still on that original $1,000. Right? And let's say you make 3 bets on the 600 and you win, and then you bet 1200, you're still on the $1,000. So you're not, you haven't added to the original pot. If you keep betting your winnings and sacrificing your losses, now we're talking, I just did 3 examples and I've done, what is it? $2,800, $3,800, $3,000, but I haven't touched the original 1,000. So basically my point is he just took bets, winnings, losses, took those bets, rolled it over into another bet. And so that's how you can get to $1 billion with, maybe $100 million over time. So that's basically it. He just kept betting and betting and betting, taking his winnings, adding it to it, making more bets. So that's where the billion comes from. But $100 million in losses.
That's a lot. But, I mean, the 9 bets per day for an entire year. I mean, is that normal?
I don't think that's normal. That seems like way, way, way too much.
I have no idea. I really don't. I don't, I know there's people that, we listen to all the time that, they bet every single day of their life. They're always giving out the odds. It's like, oh, you can do the over under here. You can do this. You can do that. But I mean, 9 bets every single day of the year.
What if we find out later?
That is all ruse?
No, that Mickelson was sitting in the living room with his wife and he said, can you believe this? The Saudi-backed LIV Golf League wants to pay me $200 million to join their league. I got to give up my PGA. I will never do. And she looked at him and said, you'll be making a phone call. No. I don't want to play for LIV. I don't want to play. You're going to do it and like it. Honey, do I want to go through the bank account over the last 3 decades that we've been married? No, I can't join LIV. You're going to join LIV and like it. $200 million? That's about right.
Now, here's...
Liv save the day for Mickelson's $100 million in just gambling losses. I mean, the guy makes $50 million a year. I get it, but that's a ton of money. I don't care how rich you are. Like, your family is not going to let you lose $100 million gambling without some sort of, hey, cut this out.
I had another question about this, and I don't know if you know the answer. I don't even know if anyone knows the answer. Can he get in trouble for betting on the Ryder Cup he was
playing? That's a great point. I'm sure there is a bylaw in it or something.
I mean, if this is the NFL, suspended for a year. We already know this.
All right, yeah, there is a rule. Now,
if you're doing it in baseball, life.
In life, exactly. I will say this. I remember a story about Phil Mickelson getting in trouble with another golfer because Jim Furyk was on a golf course and they were in the clubhouse and Furyk had missed a bunker shot and he hit the bunker shot, but it stayed in the bunker. And Mickelson said to the guy, I'll give you 4-1 odds. He holes out. And the guy said, I got that. And then Furyk holed out and Mickelson bragged about it. And he got in trouble from the PGA Tour.
I mean, that's the thing too, right? We always hear rumors or inklings that guys are betting on the side.
Yeah, of course.
During the event, you partner up two people, say, Phil and Tiger going at it with each other. They might be throwing like $100 a hole or something just between the two of them.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like if Phil's playing in an event and he's playing with a guy and both are like 7 over par and they're playing on Friday and they're both looking at their watches going, let's get the hell out of here. They might go, hey, you want to play $100 a hole? And I think that's frowned upon on tour, so they keep it amongst themselves. But I don't think there's a suspension or anything from that. I don't know. I don't know though. They're different because they're not in a union, so they don't negotiate. They're all like kind of independent contractors. So I don't know if there's a rule about that. But I know Phil got in a little trouble with that Furyk gambling thing. But it didn't lead to a suspension or a big press conference. And we're ashamed of Phil Mickelson for doing this. But if you're betting on the U.S. to win the Ryder Cup, that doesn't fall in the jurisdiction of the PGA Tour. That's a separate event. So I don't know. That's a good question. I think that's a PGA thing.
Yeah.
Not a PGA Tour thing.
Pretty much what we know now is PGA is dead.
Yeah, right? Exactly. All right, we'll continue with the bad of the day as we continue this Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio.
Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we're continuing with the good, the bad, and the dumb on a Friday. Don't forget, Steelers on the clock today. Andrew Stocky joins us in Hour 3. Sports Director WTAE in Pittsburgh. Team that went 9-8 last season with a rookie quarterback. Expectations are high, but let's be honest, how high in a loaded AFC and a loaded AFC North? So we'll continue that conversation. But let's get to the bad of the day.
Well, you know what? Sometimes it helps if I turn my mic on. I started talking. Yeah, no problem. Why am I not hearing me? The bad of the day. I have to give it to this guy. And this is kind of a, I guess, I don't know, look at the larger picture of it all. A Lions fan went ahead and got a tattoo of the Lions logo pretty much on the Super Bowl trophy. And it's saying 2024. Super Bowl champions.
Oh, don't do this, kids.
Now, here's my thinking, right? That jinxes the entire season, doesn't it?
I remember a guy, he did it for Kentucky.
Right.
He either did it in the 2014 season when they were an 8 seed and made it to the finals, or he did it in the 2015 season when they went undefeated and lost to Wisconsin. But he had the one that it did not come true.
Now, the Lions have made leaps and bounds.
Leaps and bounds.
And I do think they can win the NFC North. And I almost want to say they should be a favorite.
Yeah.
Even though they haven't really proven themselves to be a favorite just yet. It's just like you see the writing on the wall and they're a fan favorite team right now. And the NFC North kind of has been taking a step back now that Aaron Rodgers is gone. I don't know how the Vikings are going to do. Not really sure what the Bears are going to be up to. So the Lions, to me, it's like, okay, yeah, I think you guys can win the NFC North. I think you guys can make the playoffs.
Yeah.
Super Bowl?
I think they can make the playoffs. Super Bowl will be tough because, I mean, the Eagles are still loaded.
Right.
And you know, I don't know. Like it's been very difficult to grade the 49ers, right? If they don't need stellar quarterback play to be successful with the weapons that they have, then Sam Darnold might keep the ship afloat until Brock Purdy comes back. But I'm not 100% sure. But
which, by the way, did you see that?
With Brock Purdy?
Yes.
Yeah, what was it? Well, I saw him on the news, but
QB1.
Yeah. So when, how?
QB1. Trey Lance is number two. Sam Darnold's number three. Oh, man, Sam Darnold's dropped off.
That's another guy. That's another guy.
Everyone thought 2018, he's the number one overall pick. Yeah. Nope, number two.
It just goes to show you.
Yeah. Brock Purdy ranked number one.
So they made him the number one QB. Despite his injury, and went, go ahead.
And he's technically not on the injury list right now.
Not yet.
I mean, you know, he doesn't have a Q, doesn't have an O, doesn't have a D next to his name. It
does not say.
Just QB1.
The injury is one of those injuries where, like, if you get surgery, it'll help it, but then it'll be, you can do this, but if you don't, you can play with it, that kind of thing. But yeah,
I constantly forget. I'm looking at their offense right now. I forget how ridiculous it is.
Yeah,
when you see the starters on there, it's just I don't. I mean, even to the offensive line, I forgot they had Trent Williams on their team.
Yeah,
and left tackle. I mean, that guy is a wall.
Yeah, it's great. So,
but anyways, back to the Lions guy.
Yeah,
doesn't he have friends to stop him from doing this?
I hope he did, but maybe they're all caught up in Lions fever.
I mean, I get it. It's a real thing, but you got to have a sensible friend to say, hey, man, no. Don't put a year on it.
Just make it so that anytime if they ever win it, you've got the tattoo that has it.
Yeah.
Don't do the prediction thing.
And you can instantly put a year on it.
Yeah. I don't like it when people do this.
No, I hate it.
I don't like it. Get the tattoo afterwards, permanent. But here's the thing: you can have this tattoo, and no matter how you try to fix it, you're gonna look at it and go, "What was I thinking?"
Oh no, you can't fix it. Like I said, it's literally this is what it looks like from top to bottom. It's the Lions logo, that lion that you see on the helmets on top of the Lombardi Trophy. Underneath that says the word "champs." Underneath that says 2024.
So can you change 2024 to like 2028 if he wins it?
I mean, you'd have to get creative. I mean, he did the weird four. He did the triangle four.
No, that's silly.
So I don't know I mean, you can always fix it somehow.
Plus they're expensive. Tattoos are expensive.
Yeah.
You just wasted some money. You don't know. Now again, if he nails it, God bless him.
But, oh yeah. No, I mean, and whoever did the work, I mean, he's a good artist. That Lions logo looks sweet. The Lombardi Trophy looks perfect. Got the sheen in all the right places. But
But
that 2024. I mean, you could have just put champs.
You could have.
Or not even do that. I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with, is there something wrong just with the Lions logo on top of the Lombardi Trophy?
No, because you could have just been like, this is my hope. Every day I look at it, it gives me hope. Fine, that's fine.
What we're striving for.
Right, but
someday
if you do a year on it, then you've pegged it to be this thing, and if they win it 5 years from now, you're like,
he can't spin it, right? Say they don't win it this year, but they win it next?
Yeah, you can't spin it.
You can't, because that's the 2025 Super Bowl.
You've called your prediction.
Yeah.
No, look, take the money you would have had, you gave the tattoo guy, and put it on a future Super Bowl bet. Just go do that. Like, at least you'll have it in your hands, you make some money off of it if it comes true, then get your tattoo. So there you go. That's all you got to do. No, man, those things always worry me.
Yeah, I hate it.
So
absolutely. Speaking of, we were talking about the Niners. Did you see Nick Bosa?
Did I
hear about Nick Bosa?
Eat 5,000 calories?
Yeah, I almost brought this up because he can't stand eating food anymore.
What?
Because he has to eat. He has to maintain what he's trying to do, and he's trying to build up to be bigger. He's eating 4,000 to 5,000 calories per day.
You know how excited I would be if my plan was to eat 4,000 to 5,000 calories a day.
to keep up? Because I mean, first of all,
the 1800 I'm putting myself on to lose weight at my old age.
I mean, he's probably burning, what, at least 3,500 calories a day, if not more.
Yeah.
I mean, with his workout regimen and then, you know, 2-a-day practices and things like that. I mean, he's probably just...
He's burning a ton.
Yeah, 4 to 5,000. I mean, that's, you know, always blows my mind. Like, you remember Michael Phelps? We were talking about him yesterday. I think during the Olympics, and he hint out that he was eating 10,000 calorie diets.
Yeah, uh-huh. He was eating burgers and pancakes and anything he could just to, because he was burning it off.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm going out there.
It's amazing to me because I know the minute I do that, I'm...
I need a nap.
I would have that doctor calling me.
Yeah.
You know, the fat doctor.
Oh, Dr. Now?
Yeah, thank you.
Hello, Ron. Why don't you lose weight? We put you on a diet. You don't seem to understand that the calories you're consuming is making you fat.
And then you go, but I'm sticking to the diet.
No, no. You eat pizza all day and you drink Coke. What do you think happens when you do that?
I like doing that voice around, but around the house, but you can't do it very, you know, like you can't go up to your wife and go, hello.
Yeah, like,
what's
God.
That? What yep. is that? That's a doctor from my 600 pound. What?
Yep.
No, I'm sorry. It's a cartoon character I saw on Saturday mornings.
King of the Hill. King of the Hill.
King of the Hill. That's right.
I always have weird voices.
Exactly.
Now, you know what? Hey, speaking of that, I lost 20 pounds on vacation.
Oh, that's good for you. That's amazing. I gained 7 on mine.
Well, okay. Well, let me back up. I don't know if I lost 20 pounds on vacation.
20 pounds is a lot in 2 weeks, by the way. You should probably go see a doctor.
No,
I
don't
know that much.
Let me back up. When I had a physical in June, between June and then when we got back from vacation, I lost 20 pounds in that time.
What was, like, when you got to your father-in-law's house, was he like, did he have food he didn't want to eat?
Well, no, we just...
How did you lose 20 pounds?
We were doing stuff every single day.
Yeah, but so what? Everybody does stuff every single day. You lose 20 pounds.
No. You,
dude,
I mean, no,
I'm not kidding. Saying, that is 70,000 calories.
The math doesn't work. What I'm saying, I know. I was amazed, or our scale is broken, but I'm going I lost 20 pounds.
Okay, 20 pounds... A pound is 3,500 calories.
All right.
20 pounds is 70,000 calories.
There you go.
Now, if you ever watch videos of people that go, I'm going to try to lose 8,000 calories today, it is impossible. They literally, from morning to night, they're on a treadmill, they're on a bike, they're lifting weights,
right,
they're swimming.
Maybe
70,000 calories is a ton of calories, not to mention that your body is you know, keep needing some to just keep you alive.
Yeah. I think I was eating better. I wasn't snacking as much. That's a good thing. And, you know, we were doing like extreme things. I mean, I was swimming every single day.
I understand. What I'm saying is that those are great things. 20 pounds, you got to find another reason than exercise. Because if it was that easy, people would go, oh, shoot, I'll just go to the gym and I'll just do stuff all day. 20 pounds, I'm almost worried for you, man. That's a lot of weight in a month.
Well, I'll keep you updated. If all of a sudden it's another 10 pounds and I've been done anything.
Because it's 70,000 calories on top of the calories you need to live. So if you need 2,500 calories to live, you've burned not just the calories to survive. You burned an extra 70,000.
Hey, you just put your mind to it. You can do it, Tony. 2 weeks.
That's crazy.
2 week diet.
20 pounds in a month?
Fasted for 2 weeks. That's what I was.
That's fasting. Now, that probably, you probably did.
No, it could be spread out. It could have been from June.
Yeah, all right.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
Okay, so we're going on to the dumb of the day this hour already? This has been fun. I like it when we do this.
Yeah, so. And I'm glad it worked out this way because I really wanted to just spend some time talking about this.
Okay, the dumb of the day
Dumb of the day is a historical marker.
Okay.
That commemorates what happened on August 8th, 2004. It's a temporary historical marker. I do not believe it's a real one. It's a makeshift one, but it. I gotta put some music on for a second. Hold on, just kind of set the mood for you, Tony.
Okay, sure.
So, Maybe I'll wait for the guitar riff to kick in.
All right.
Because I know you really love this song.
Right. Is this the dumping of the poop in the Illinois River?
Yeah, yes. So somebody put a makeshift marker commemorating the day, August 8, 2004. If you don't know the story, this is one of the more fantastic stories I think I've heard. So Dave Matthews' tour bus accidentally, purposely, I don't really know.
Purposely, because he's an evil person. Yeah.
Well, wasn't he?
Because he probably ordered it from the bus. They said, "Dave, what would you like to do with the sewage? Dump it into the river, because I hate everybody."
So his tour bus dumped, what was it, 600 pounds? 800 pounds.
Good Lord.
800 pounds of bus black water. All right.
They had that much sewage. 600 pounds of sewage was on the bus?
Well, Tony, listen to the song. Do you think they have any sewage?
Well, okay, first of all...
And I chose this song specifically, Space Between, because I felt it was...
Okay, first of all, think about the tour bus. It's got all sorts of cool stuff on it, right? Now, all the gear is going on a truck, so you're not bringing anything heavy with you. But that's still a lot of weight, extra weight that the bus is carrying.
Yeah, well, 800 pounds. And I don't know, have you ever done RV trips?
No. Okay. I've wanted to, but I've never done it.
So one thing you learn, one thing you have to learn, is you have to empty the tanks every once in a while. But there are two valves. There's gray water and black water.
Okay.
Gray water is like, you know, dishes. You wash some dishes, some dirty dishes, you know, the water goes into the gray water tank. The black water tank is just toilet.
Just toilet? That's it? Nothing else?
Pretty much. Unless you stick other things in the toilet. But it's pretty much toilet water. Like your shower.
600 pounds of sewage. It's crazy.
Your shower should go into the gray water tank.
Okay.
Like if you were to take a shower on the tour bus, that should go into the gray water tank.
You think there is a shower on the tour bus?
Oh, yeah.
Is there? Why would you need it?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, if you're...
You're not RVing.
No, you're not.
You're going from hotel to hotel.
You're going from hotel to hotel.
Like, so it would be similar to, would you need it in your car if you were cross-country trip?
Well, you know, if you're the driver, because do you get a hotel room or you just drive?
Sure. What, you don't sleep in the bus?
Yeah, you sleep in the bus.
No. You sleep in the bus when you're on the road, but you don't sleep in the bus when you're parked at a hotel.
Well, no, the band doesn't. I'm saying the crew.
I'm almost sure that it's like pilots. They don't make the pilots sleep on a plane when it lands in Atlanta.
Because it's uncomfortable, but the bus has beds.
But it's their beds. All right. Let's pretend in the non-real world that the bus driver is forced to sleep on the bus because the record company doesn't want to give him a hotel while he's traveling the band around the country. Okay, then I would say you need a shower. But you don't seem to need a shower if you're just going from city to city. That last time I checked a T-shirt, the cities seem to be close proximity together when you're on tour.
All right, this is...
Like, you don't go from Boston to L.A. to Miami to Seattle to then go to Dallas. You go, like, to Dallas, to Austin, to Houston, to New Orleans, to, you know, Tallahassee, to Gainesville, to, like that's how you drive. So I don't know if they need one or not. I'm saying.
I don't know if they need one either, but I do think there's a shower in there. Now, this is Chris Howard. I believe it's a girl, because if it's a guy, I hate him. Because he spells, or the word Chris is spelled C-H-R-Y-S.
Okay.
And, I mean, if there's a male Chris out there that spells it with a Y, you got to hate him.
Done. Yeah.
Yeah, you got to hate him. But I think it's a woman, because I'm looking at this. And she did like this blog, Tour Bus Life. She said that the band... Her and her band sleep on the bus at night while they're driving from gig to gig.
Sure.
The bus driver sleeps in a hotel.
Okay. But when they're driving, that's exactly what I would do.
Yeah.
So if I'm on a bus, if I just played it in Cleveland and we're on our way to Cincinnati and I'm done at midnight and I've partied and I've done everything I can, the bus leaves at 3 a.m., I'm sleeping. But then when I get to the Cincinnati, I'm sure they're going to be like, here's your hotel. because, I mean, Joe Walsh talked about trashing hotels all the time.
Of course,
you get your hotel, then you go in there and you rest up until the concert that night or whenever it's scheduled.
The other thing,
on the bus. I'm not saying you don't sleep on the bus. I'm saying it doesn't seem to be a place you need to shower if you're going from hotel to hotel.
True.
All around the country.
Right, and they said
like
that,
if you're RVing, that's the purpose of RVing.
Yeah, there
like
is
that you're
showers.
Not getting hotels.
Most of the time, there are showers on a tour bus, even though they're not ever really used.
I would say they're not used. Yeah, but it's still if you're 600 pounds of waste that Dave Matthews
800
pounds of waste that Dave Matthews dumped into the Illinois River, then you're probably showering as well as all the stuff you're letting go of.
Yeah,
while you're on
but
the bus,
Tony, that's. You know, 800 pounds into the river, you make it sound like, oh, it's environmental. There was a tour boat, a sightseeing tour boat that got rained upon.
Yes, that's my problem. It was rude. I don't think it destroyed fish. I think it was rude.
Yeah,
and it made a mess of the tour. Made a mess of the.
Can
boat
you imagine?
It.
I mean, you know, this is the same river that turns green.
This is why, right? I don't like this band.
This is the river they dyed green.
Is it? Yeah, they do, right?
Yeah, they dyed green for St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah.
And so you've seen the boats. Vince Vaughn drove one. Remember? What was that movie where he with Jennifer Aniston? They kept fighting all the time. Breakup or something like that?
Yeah, something like that.
He was a narrator on one of these tour boats. Can you imagine going under one of these bridges and then just get rained upon?
With black water?
800 pounds of it.
I mean, my God. Did they ever settle out of court or anything like that for their damage to people?
I don't know.
No, no.
But I guess they described it as, you know, the liquid waste was brownish yellow in color and had a foul, offensive odor.
By the way, how did they get caught? Was it video? Like, did somebody notice that the thing they did it? Did somebody like witness it? Like, how did they get? How did we find out that was Dave Matthews' van?
I think because it was 1:18 in the afternoon.
Right, and they probably figured that's when he left.
And, you know,
I'm sure there were witnesses, but I didn't know if they had to go, let's look at the videotape of we got
I mean,
a security
maybe they did,
camera.
But I mean, if the boat's going
shows
underneath
the bus.
And you could tell that it's Dave Matthews' bus. I'm sure it didn't say Dave Matthews' band on the side of the bus, but probably recognized it or somebody else, you know, from the street. And they probably went over and said, hey, man, you had an accident.
Yeah. I notice that all the time here in Nashville. It always drives me crazy. I see these elaborate buses all over the place, and I go, who's in it? But they don't,
tell
you who's in it.
Never.
Like, who could that be? Could that be so-and-so or whatever? And then you kind of remember, oh, yeah, no, they're on tour, blah, blah, blah. But, they're, you know, they never – like Dolly Parton had a bus that said Dolly on it. It was like driving down the road. Dolly Parton's in that bus or it's driving without her.
Yep.
But that's her
going
bus.
Going to pick her up.
Right, but they don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
Like, so. it's like NASCARs. Like they go in those haulers, but it's completely designed so you know that that's Chase Elliott's car.
Yeah,
it's beautiful. Look at the way the hauler looks.
And he may or may not be in there.
Yeah, he may or may not be in there.
You know, like remember Tom Cruise was cruising with the rest of the crew.
That's
in
right.
The back of the truck.
Yeah, that's right.
And got pulled over by a nice looking cop once.
Oh, that's right. Exactly. Remember that? They were like initiation. Because he had won a race.
Yep.
Yeah, Days of Thunder.
But yeah, I love the fact that somebody, you know what, and that needs to become a permanent plaque, I think.
Oh, no,
I think
so too.
It's a makeshift plaque. The city will probably take it down because maybe they want to forget about it. Or maybe they're like, well, we want Dave Matthews to come back to Chicago sometime.
So we can always be reminded that the Dave Matthews Band did a hideous act as well as playing hideous music.
Now we just need old what's-his-name. Who's the you know to talk tell the story the boat captain?
Yeah, he can
well,
tell the story.
But he needs to talk in the voice of the guy from Jaws.
I had a friend of mine. So a friend of mine and I were talking about Dave Matthews. I said I can't stand Dave Matthews Band, and he goes why? And I go I don't know.
Yeah,
and he goes really? He goes you don't like any of those songs? I go no, and he goes why? I go I don't know. I go I can't tell you why I don't like his music. I don't like the music. I don't know. I don't like his voice.
No,
I don't like the fiddle or whatever it is.
And like I said, that's, you know, my wife is the same way with Alanis Morissette.
Yeah.
She can't give me a clear reason. She's like, I don't know.
It's just a thing that I have. You can tell me how many record of the years he's won tours. I don't know.